Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Great to be back.
Today we're looking into something pretty fascinating. The historical relationship between the peoples ancestral to the Kurds, or identified as Kurds, and non-Abrahamic religions. We're talking before 2010.
Right. So think faiths like Zoroastrianism, Mithraism, maybe Manichaeism.
Exactly. And we're specifically not focusing on Islam, Christianity, Judaism.
Or the related syncretic faiths like Yazidism, Yarsinism, Kurdish Alevism. That's for other explorations.
Yeah. The goal today is really to understand the religious backdrop of the region we generally call Kurdistan, the Zagros and Taurus Mountains, mostly.
And how these older faiths might have shaped things before the more recent sort of revivals of some of these traditions we sometimes hear about now.
Crucially, though, we need to be careful with terminology, right? The word Kurd, as we use it today, it's more recent.
Absolutely. So you'll hear us say things like ancestors of the Kurds or peoples of the Zagros-Taurus region or specific ancient names when we can, just to be historically accurate.
Okay, so what are we covering? The ancient religious scene, Zoroastrianism's role, how widespread was it really?
Connections to Mithraism, Manichaeism,
yeah.
Any cultural echoes that might have lingered.
And then how things transition later on, plus some of the difficulties in studying all this.
It's not always straightforward.
Not at all. Okay, let's start with that ancient landscape. The Zagros-Taurus area, people have been living there for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. We've got cultures like the Halaf, you know, maybe 8,000 years ago, known for their distinctive pottery.
And the Ubaid culture later on.
But even before the Indo-Iranians show up, you have major players like the Hurrians. They were around for thousands of years.
Kingdoms like Urartu, Mitanni, possibly the Gushans, Manaeans.
Exactly. And their legacy is seen as, well, pretty foundational for later Kurdish culture. Mythology, maybe even genetics, some argue.
Some modern Kurdish clan names might even trace back.
It's suggested, yeah, it points to this deep, maybe pre-Indo-European layer. And of course, there's interaction with Mesopotamia, too. Symbols like the crescent and star, those have long histories in the area.
Okay, then around the second millennium BCE, we get migrations. Indo-European tribes, specifically Indo-Iranians, arrive on the Iranian plateau.
And they bring this shared religious background with roots going back even further, maybe fourth to third millennium BCE.
Key ideas like Asha, is that right?
Asha, yeah. Cosmic order, truth. And different types of divine beings, Ahuras and Daivas.
Rituals, too, like the Yasna ceremony and the sacred drink, Hauma.
Right. Now, here's a really key point some sources emphasize. Before Islam became dominant, it seems the majority of people in these Kurdish regions followed something described as a Western Iranic pre-Zoroastrian faith.
So, related to Zoroastrianism's origins, but distinct?
Possibly, yeah. Coming straight from that older Indo-Iranian tradition. Mazdeyazin is a term sometimes used more broadly for these beliefs. It's like the religious bedrock of the region before Zoroaster's reforms took hold elsewhere.
Okay, so that sets the scene nicely for Zoroastrianism itself. Founded by Zoroaster, or Zarathustra, likely originating where? Central Asia, Eastern Iran.
The exact location and date are debated, you know, widely debated, actually. But it emerges as a reform of that older Indo-Iranian religion we were just talking about.
And the core beliefs.
Well, it's fundamentally dualistic. Mm. You have Ahura Mazda, the wise lord, the good creator.
Versus Angrmenu, the destructive spirit, basically evil.
Exactly. And humans have free will to choose sides in this cosmic struggle. The emphasis is on good thoughts, good words, good deeds.
And there's an afterlife. Judgment. Good eventually wins out. Fire is central too. Fire temple.
Right. Fire is a symbol of purity in Ahura Mazda. And the Avesta contains the main scriptures, with the Gathas being the oldest hymns, possibly by Zoroaster himself.
No, Zoroastrianism definitely got political backing. The Medes, the Achaemenids.
And especially the Sasanians. They made it the state religion. That's a huge deal.
And we see evidence on the ground, right, in Kurdish areas. That tomb at Kuzkapan in Iraqi Kurdistan, for instance.
Yeah, that's often cited. It shows a clear Sasanian era. Likely Zoroastrian presence. And Kurdish tribes were part of the Sasanian Empire, so it's logical there'd be influence.
But here's the big question, I suppose. Just because it was the state religion, did everyone in the Zagros Mountains actually, you know, fully convert and practice it?
That's the debate. There was likely a gap between the religion of the Sasanian court and elites and what was happening in more remote tribal communities.
So that Western Iranic pre-Zoroastrian faith might have still been the main thing for many.
That's one strong possibility proposed by scholars. Some sources even mention Mithraism holding on strongly among certain Kurdish groups, like the Guran or Harami.
So state sponsorship doesn't necessarily mean universal adoption by the population.
Exactly. It's a common issue when we look at religion in ancient empires.
And there's even a counter-argument suggesting that, actually, the ancestors of modern Kurds were largely not Zoroastrian.
Right, emphasizing the sort of sociological difference between an organized state church and the more decentralized tribal life in the mountains.
And Sasanian records complaining about, what was it? People revering black snakes.
Yeah, things like that. Practices that seem to contradict Zoroastrian tenets. It suggests that state patronage didn't just erase older or different beliefs. The Sasanian state sometimes struggled to impose uniformity.
Okay, so the picture's complex. Then comes the 7th century CE, the Arab-Muslim conquests.
And that's a major turning point. Zoroastrianism's political backing disappears. Battles like Jalala in 637 were significant.
Kurdish tribes gradually submit to the caliphate.
And conversion to Islam starts, though it's a process over centuries, sometimes voluntary, sometimes driven by politics or economics.
The jizya tax on non-Muslims, for example.
Right, and sometimes through pressure or outright persecution for Zoroastrians, which led some to emigrate, like the Parsis going to India.
Others maybe retreated further into the mountains.
Plausible, though direct evidence is scarce.
But even with Islam becoming dominant over centuries, the memory of Zoroastrianism persisted, didn't it? Particularly leading up to 2010.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. It gets woven into modern Kurdish nationalist narratives, sometimes presented as the original or authentic Kurdish religion.
Though that itself is contested. People debate how Kurdish it really was, or if it's more of a, well, a nationalist idealization.
It's definitely a complex part of identity discussions.
Okay, let's pause there for a second.
Good idea.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbosh, Hannah.
Perfect timing. Rojbosh. We'll see what she's brought today.
Okay, let's try this. It's pretty good today, actually. Not too bitter.
Mine's good, too. Doesn't even need extra sugar, I think. Well done, Hannah.
Okay, chai acquired. Let's get back to it. So, beyond Zoroastrianism, what other non-Abrahamic connections are important here?
Mithra, yes. Mm-hmm. A major figure in the Indo-Iranian pantheon. God of covenants, light, oaths. Really important.
And while he was included in Zoroastrianism,
there were also distinct Mithraic devotional practices, and these seem to have been quite significant in the regions where Kurdish ancestors lived.
Maybe even more so than Zoroastrianism for some groups, like the Guran or Harami you mentioned.
Some scholars strongly suggest that yes, that Mithraism might have been their primary faith, even during Sasanian times. There's also speculation that Mithraic elements might have fed into later syncretic traditions in Kurdistan.
Interesting, like maybe influencing figures in Yazidism.
Possibly. Some characteristics of Sheikh Shams al-Din, for instance, are sometimes linked by scholars back to Mithra. It suggests these older layers could be really persistent.
Okay, and then there's Manichaeism, founded by Mani, an Iranian prophet, in the 3rd century CE.
Right, and Manichaeism was this really ambiguous attempt to synthesize existing religions.
Zoroastrianism, Christianity, Buddhism, Mesopotamian stuff, all rolled into one.
Pretty much. It had this dualistic cosmology, light versus darkness, a bit like Zoroastrianism, but with its own complex mythology. And it spread incredibly fast, especially through Aramaic-speaking areas.
From the Roman Empire all the way to China.
Yeah. Mani himself presented his work, the Shaburigen, to the Sasanian emperor Shapur's feast, who initially tolerated it.
So given it started in Mesopotamia and spread through the Sasanian lands, it must have been present in Kurdish regions, too.
Logically, yes. It was definitely around.
But did it gain a major following among Kurdish groups specifically?
That's harder to say based on the available sources before 2010. Manichaeism faced a lot of persecution later on from both Zoroastrians and eventually Muslims.
So it declined.
It did, although pockets survived into the Abbasid era. While direct evidence for widespread adherence among Kurdish ancestors is limited, some scholars think it might have had an indirect influence on later regional beliefs, maybe through shared ideas or motifs.
It feels like there were just so many layers of belief interacting.
Absolutely. And we shouldn't forget even older layers, things going back potentially to the Hurrians or other ancient groups.
Like remnants of nature worship.
You could call it that. Veneration of mountains, trees, springs. We talked about snakes earlier. These practices have been noted among groups like the Dimli or Zaza.
And the reverence for black snakes, contrasting with Zoroastrian views.
Yeah. These fragments, these echoes, they suggest the survival of very ancient belief systems, perhaps predating even the main Indo-Iranian influence for some aspects.
So these echoes persisted. Leading up to 2010, we still see cultural traditions with potential pre-Islamic, non-Abrahamic roots. Newroz is the obvious one.
Huge celebration. The new year around the spring equinox, celebrated by Kurds, Persians, many others.
And in Kurdish tradition, tied to the myth of Kawa the blacksmith defeating the tyrant Zahak.
Right, a distinctly Kurdish myth, often linked symbolically to freedom or even the Medes. But the festival itself, Newroz, has ancient Iranian origins, probably tied to Zoroastrian themes of renewal, light overcoming darkness.
Its survival is powerful evidence of cultural continuity.
Definitely. And beyond big festivals, maybe smaller folk beliefs and practices too. Things passed down.
Like the snake thing again, maybe other local customs or superstitions.
Quite possibly. These things can be very resilient, passed through families and communities, even when the original religious context is gone.
So going back to the transition to Islam, we said it was gradual, starting in the 7th century.
Yes, with the conquests, local leaders and tribes coming under the caliphate's rule. Various factors drove conversion over time.
Politics, social pressure, genuine belief.
Economic factors like the jizya tax. Sometimes coercion or violence, sadly. And the spread of Islamic learning through madrasas from the 10th century onwards played a big role in solidifying Islam's position.
So by the period just before 2010, the vast majority of Kurds identified with Islam, mainly Sunni Islam?
Correct. But as we've seen, that pre-Islamic past, particularly the idea of Zoroastrianism, still held a certain resonance.
Especially within nationalist movements seeking a distinct identity separate from Arab, Turkish, or Persian neighbors.
Right. It became a symbolic resource.
This brings us back to the challenges of studying this history. It sounds really tricky.
It is. Sources are often scarce, especially pre-Islamic texts directly from Kurdish ancestors. What we have is often written by outsiders, potentially with their own biases.
And linking ancient peoples, like the Medes or Hurrians, directly to modern Kurds. That's complex. Ethnogenesis is complicated.
Very. Plus, as we said, the very meaning of Kurd has evolved. It wasn't always an ethnic identifier in the way it is now.
And modern Kurdish nationalism inevitably shapes how people interpret this past, doesn't it?
Hugely. There's sometimes a tendency to emphasize or perhaps overemphasize pre-Islamic connections, particularly non-Abrahamic ones like Zoroastrianism, to build that distinct identity narrative.
Concepts like Mirdat Izadi's Yazdanism, this idea of a single ancient Kurdish religion encompassing Yazidism, Yarsinism, Alevism, fit that pattern, maybe?
They do reflect that tendency, yes, although Izadi's specific framework is highly contested by most academic scholars in the field. It highlights the ongoing debate.
So scholars are still debating the extent of Zoroastrianism, the role of Mithraism, the links between ancient peoples and Kurds today.
Absolutely. And how to interpret syncretic elements in later religions like Yazidism or Yarsinism. A critical approach, carefully weighing the evidence, is just essential. We have to separate historical analysis from modern identity projects as much as possible.
That's the goal, yes. Though they inevitably interact.
Well, this exploration, looking back at the pre-Islamic, non-Abrahamic religious world of the ancestors of the Kurds, it really shows just a rich and layered picture.
It really does. From those ancient indigenous traditions, the Indo-Iranian base, then the impact of major organized religions like Zoroastrianism, the strong current of Mithraism, the arrival of Manichaeism, it was a dynamic landscape.
And even though Islam became the dominant force over centuries, those older echoes didn't vanish. They remained in culture, in memory, and as we saw, even factored into identity formation much later.
It's a great case study in religious change and persistence, I think. And it really underscores why we need to be critical consumers of history, you know, aware of source limitations, aware of modern perspectives influencing interpretations.
Absolutely. Well, we hope this look back has given you, our listeners, some valuable insights into this really fascinating slice of Kurdish history. Hopefully it sparks more curiosity about the region's incredibly diverse religious heritage.
So think about it. What aspects of this layered history really stood out to you? What questions do you still have about how these ancient peoples lived and what they believed?
We really encourage you to look into some of the sources and scholarship around this. Continue your own exploration of the Kurdish past. There's always more to uncover.